As we're building a team, we're looking for several things to happen within that team structure. We're looking for friendships to be formed, as the team that is bonded is very strong, and it's a great tool for the forward movement of the ministry. We should be fostering relationships, where we're building each other up, praying for one another, and holding each other accountable. We should be avoiding gossip, critical spirits, and creating an atmosphere where we get along with each other, and we forgive when we've offended one another. We instruct one another, help one another, and extend hospitality. We serve one another as we're serving the ministry, refilling each other's cups as we pour out into the women in our care. Now, while this may sound like a wonderfully beautiful picture of ministry, it might be a really high expectation, an expectation that we as humans tend to fail miserably at. And while I hate to admit it, it seems to be something that women are especially prone to lose sight of. As emotional creatures, the very way that God created us to be, we're often more self-conscious than we need to be. We take offense to things that were said, even though it was never intended that way. We may read too much into a decision or an action, or take it as a personal slight when that wasn't the case at all. We're more apt to react and think about it later, because our emotions can get the better of us. We like to talk out our problems, and thus we can become more inclined to gossip and criticize without ever even intending it. Over the course of my life, I've worked in teams that were predominantly male, equally mixed, and all female. The greatest difficulties I have ever faced have always fallen in the groups that had a larger percentage of women. It happened enough for me to consider this as a valid concern in sustaining a women's ministry. Things can get out of hand very quickly, and we may not even see it coming until it's too late. In my experience, I've noticed that when trouble strikes a women's ministry, it usually begins with personality conflicts. Personality conflicts can be difficult to navigate through because there wasn't anything that necessarily set the relationship off on a bad course. It wasn't that one person offended the other or did harm towards them. Their personalities just didn't mesh. Then, over time of serving together, it would become more apparent, and it would start to be simply just not getting along on a personal level, and then manifest itself as they would work together on projects. Things would be said between friends on the team, and then you end up with an us versus them situation that's grown completely out of control. I've learned over time that when you have personality conflicts on the team, it can't be kept under wraps for long. You might start to notice that two women never speak to each other during the meetings, or that they're always sitting as far from each other as possible. And if you need a committee to handle something, you can bet that the two women won't be raising their hands together. That's the subtle part of a personality conflict. It starts getting more obvious when there are side conversations during the meeting, eye rolls when someone presents an idea, and when you start noticing some of the group is socializing outside of the meeting while the rest are being left out. Because in personality conflicts, there always seems to be a comfortability in numbers. It's almost as if a person can recognize that if they're the only one that has a problem with you, then maybe the problem isn't you at all. Maybe the real problem is with them. But if they can get another person to agree with them, then they feel justified in their feelings towards you. The more people who agree with them, the better they feel. And then they have successfully convinced themselves that the problem is in fact you, even when it's not. This is when the us versus them issue really becomes more visible during the meetings. And what's interesting to me is that when you begin to mediate a situation like this, almost no one realizes it's happening. In my personal experiences, I've never witnessed a case where someone was trying to initially take down a ministry or a leader, although I do believe it can happen occasionally. But in my experiences, everyone involved doesn't seem to notice that what they're doing is destructive or divisive. They just see it as friends talking about the ministry they serve on. They don't recognize it being gossip. They're just sharing their opinions. They don't see it as criticizing. They will share their goal is just to make the ministry better without recognizing the manner in which they're going about it is completely wrong. When they get called on their behaviors, they are then defensive, because they've been casting themselves in such an innocent light, which makes recovery and reconciliation feel like an impossibility. Your personality conflicts between single people will eventually escalate into groups of people, and then you'll have a disgruntled ministry. I once spoke with a ministry leader who knew that there was something going on within the team. She recognized the tension, however, she didn't know what it was. No one was talking to her about it, but she could sense that there was a problem. And she was right. Boy, was she right. There were a lot of private conversations going on in the background. In this case, it became a situation of them versus her, because the problem was with the ministry leader, but she didn't have a clue that it was even happening. The more she was doing to try to fix the ministry, the more fuel that she was adding to the fire. And this lack of communication created a division within the team that would take a long time to heal. And it all started with a personality clash that escalated over time. See, personality conflicts are now not the only way that you can end up with a disgruntled ministry. It can happen when the main leader of the ministry pulls away from teamwork and pushes forward their own agendas and ideas. The team then begins to feel unnecessary and undervalued. And it can happen when the team feels that the church staff doesn't support their ministry goals. It can also develop when certain members of the team seem to have more influence than others. If a ministry doesn't have a clear goal or vision, a team can become disgruntled as they try to influence the planning with their own ideas of what the women want. The more disgruntled a ministry becomes, the deeper the divide that can be created. And this will impact the ministry as a whole, because a divided ministry no longer shares that united goal. And this is why having a structure and a clear vision is so important to ministry from the very, very beginning. If everyone has a designated role, they have a voice. If the team has a clear vision or mission statement, then they're serving a unified purpose. A structured team creates less room for conflict to breed. And when it does arise, it will be noticed by the leadership faster. Then it can be addressed before it gets out of control. As the leader of the ministry, this might mean having to have a sit-down conversation with each person individually or together in order to mediate the conflict. As a result, you might determine that there's some restructuring that needs to happen, or you can clear up some miscommunication that's occurred between them. Bring the behaviors and conflict into light and try to help the women involved overcome those differences. You can strategize better ways to interact with each other or communicate together as team members. In the worst case scenario, you may have to ask someone to leave the ministry team, or both. Of course, we would want this to be the last possible action, and it can be done in a way that doesn't cause further dissension. But it begins with a gentle conversation that addresses the problem, not from an accusatory perspective, but from a genuine desire to resolve the conflict. If you find yourself unable to resolve the conflict, or unfortunately, as the leader, you're part of that conflict, you may need to involve someone from the staff to help mediate. This might be a pastor, an elder, or one of their wives. We can have a positive attitude toward conflict because through it we grow. Once, I was in a conflict with another ministry leader. I called on my mentor to help me through the situation. I needed wise counsel. She said to me, "I know that this is a really difficult time for you, and I'm really sorry that you're having to deal with this, but I am so excited to see what God is going to use this for. You're being refined, and I know it hurts, but God is going to be glorified through this." She was right. Not only were we able to get past the conflict, but our relationship improved beyond anything I could have imagined at that time. It's really easy to blame the conflict on Satan, the world, and others. We can allow those beliefs to cloud us from the fact that God might be using the conflict to strengthen us as an individual, as a team, and as a ministry. The conflict may be the push that we need to move forward in a new ministry because we've been ignoring His gentle nudging to leave this one. The conflict might be the lesson we need to prepare us for a greater calling. Finally, we need to consider the impact that change can have on a ministry. As your team evaluates and course corrects the ministry, you might end up changing your mission statement. This might come from the church, or as God changes or grows the vision through the pastor. Change can come in small stages over time, which can be a lot easier to manage, but sometimes there's going to be a big change, and that can create uncertainty, and uncertainty can breed chaos. What if your ministry has been moving in a certain direction for a long time, and you might even feel like you're heading toward that final goal, and then boom, the church makes a turn and it goes in a new direction? You're left to start over from scratch, redefining your ministry. This might upset some of the team who feel like all of the work was for nothing. What if you're serving on the ministry team and the leader suddenly steps down or leaves the church and no one seems eager to fill her spot? Or what if a new leader steps up and immediately starts making big changes? See, women's ministry can find itself in a crisis situation even when things appear to be working out well. But when major upheaval occurs, there's often a lot of confusion and a high probability of inaction as the team tries to process through what is happening. There was a women's ministry that went through this very scenario, and they were totally unprepared for it. There was a main leader, and everybody worked together on each project. There were no positions or designated roles, and one evening the team showed up for the next planning meeting, and the leader wasn't there. Instead, the pastor's wife told them that the team leader had stepped down from leadership. No one had a clue, and clearly they were caught off guard. There were so many events that were in progress, and the team really didn't have the time to process the loss. The decision had to be made. Would they move forward with these plans? And then who was going to step up and coordinate these events? Over the next several months, the team went through the motions, but there was never time to even discuss what happened. This created a fracture that was not properly dealt with. And once the team got over those hurdles of events, they couldn't seem to really move forward. There was no clarity of who was in charge. There was no support from the church on how to deal with this huge shift. And there had never been any future leaders identified and trained to take over with that intention. No one knew who was in charge, what was going on, or even how to proceed. In the wake of this major change, a lot of holes in the ministries were revealed. The leader had been doing so much herself that the team lacked the information and direction that they needed to move forward. They kept trying to move forward without ever repairing those holes, but over time the holes were getting bigger and bigger. And the ministry was crumbling in the wake of these shifts of personality conflicts beginning to arise, and they were never there before. The ministry became disgruntled. There were complaints and unanswered questions. There was confusion and hurt. Some of the women left the team because they were simply loyal to the previous leader. And as new women came into the team, there was a lack of cohesion, and the structure became even more confusing as time passed. See, when a ministry doesn't start with structure, it is in no way prepared for when crisis strikes. Little things grow into big things, and big things can wipe out an entire ministry. This is why it's vital that ministries have the support of the church staff, so that when a major crisis occurs, there are people who have more experience that can walk us through that difficult season. No matter how much you prepare for technical problems, we can never be prepared for the emotional ones. After serving with your ministry team for any length of time, your relationship is going to become close, and then tragedy strikes, an illness, a death. Ecclesiastes tells us that there is a time for everything, a time to weep and to mourn, a time to laugh and to dance, and a time to tear down and rebuild, to be silent or to speak. There's an occasion for everything and a time for every activity under heaven, which means that there's a time to stop and to be together with an empty calendar. We can cancel and reschedule so that we can come together and heal. We can mourn loss or rally around our friend who is ill. We can even put a stop to the team, tear it back down to the basics, and rebuild it back up in time. Never be afraid in crisis to stop. Never be afraid to be still and to reevaluate as a team. Embrace each other, pray, love, grow, and then regroup and start fresh.